All right. So, thanks for having me here. Yeah, so as Andreas said, this is supposed to be an overview of the techniques and the approach from RUN-1 Atlas-SUSY searches. I actually struggled quite a bit with this subject matter because it's obviously very broad. There are a lot of techniques. And so how to put it together in a short talk, I struggled very much. And so what I'm going to do, I mean, these are the possible, these are the areas that I want to cover. So how the signal cross-sections are estimated with their uncertainties, the types of signal Monte Carlo that we use for the acceptance calculations. These will be fairly brief, actually. Then a discussion about background estimation techniques. And then also this will be the bulk of it, which is the strategy for searching for SUSY and what kind of signal models we use. So the problem is going through all of this is either it's too abstract and not very satisfying, although on the other hand, going into all the details takes too long and maybe is a bit of overkill. And so what I'm going to, what I decided to do in the end is rather than going through the techniques in detail, I'm just going to pick up a few points that might be slightly less well under control than others. All right. So let's start with this, with maybe the easiest part where there's really not, I think this is fairly state of the art, which is the signal cross-section. So yeah, this is, there's already, as you know, there's an LHC-SUSY cross-section working group and methods are all known and they're state of the art calculations there. What that means is that Skork-Luino cross-sections are calculated next to leading log with NNLFast. And this is a very nice program. I think CMS also uses this. It also estimates the uncertainties from scale, PDF, and AlphaS. And so that part is completely under control. For the electroweak processes, that's not included here. And so we use Prospino2. And then by hand, basically, the cross-sections are recalculated for a range of scale, PDF, and AlphaS variations. But I think this is, there's really not much to say here, I would say. For the modeling, at least in RUN-1, we used in Atlas a mix of Hurwitz++ and MadGraph interface to PGS6. The MadGraph samples were generated with up to one extra parton of the matrix element. And in RUN-2, this has been improved. So we use almost, we use exclusively MadGraph now and with up to two extra partons of the matrix element. Something that came up recently.
Do you make also the decays done in MadGraph?
No, they're not done in MadGraph.
Except for specific functions.
Yes, it depends.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
So it just stops you making decay to MadGraph?
Well, let's see. Is it always the case? It's, yeah, it's.
It's only where we think the spin correlations can matter.
But the spin correlations depend on the SUSY model. So what do you do?
We haven't.
Well, there are several assumptions that are made on the right-hand. So that's what was done also in RUN-1. I mean, I think that the approach of CMS and Atlas there was different. In RUN-1, CMS was reweighting. I mean, and in Atlas, at the beginning, we were producing dedicated model with left and right components because, of course, the acceptance is different. And now we have a procedure to do reweighting as well. So.
But in CMS, we usually just phase-space decays everywhere. Pretty much.
And for RUN-2, it's going to be MadGraph plus PTS6 or?
PTA8.
PTA8. Okay. And so the merging, you're going to do it with one of those example files of coming from PTA8?
That level of detail, you probably have to ask Monica, actually.
Well, the scale, you mean, I mean, in most of the.
No, I mean, MadGraph automatically, if you're doing leading order, it doesn't, as far as I remember.
Well, we have up to two additional jets. So that's.
Yeah, no, I'm just saying, MCA, you're doing one loop. No, you're doing three level up to two partons.
Yes.
I don't think that MadGraph automatically uses PT as a shower in that mode. I might be wrong, I don't remember. I'm just.
We use the CKKW matching and.
Yes.
Isn't that just for MLM? MLM name.
Yeah, but you're using some other code that is coming. It's not part of.
No,
it's part of MyGraph.
Okay. So lately, there are now NLO models that are starting to become available for AMC at NLO and also in PowHag, and these are just a couple of distributions. These are actually from some theory papers, but you know there are actually some. You can see the for instance, this is for Gluino to two jets and LSP, and you can see sort of the K factors that depend on the PT of the leading jet, or this is the case of the stop, where you actually see again some shape effects on the missing ET. So these are interesting because we had always claimed that that NLO effects are all sort of are absorbed into the cross section and the acceptance is not affected. But that may not be the case, so this is maybe something to watch in the future. And that's all I wanted to say about that part. Okay, so let's then go on to the background estimation. So this is the part that we spend most of the time on, although maybe it's less interesting.
Sorry, George, just to conclude on the NLO effects in the basically in the shapes then of the distributions. Would you say that the limits we quote are conservative with respect to the effects? Probably they make. It's probably difficult to say this in general.
It's hard to say. I mean, you know, yeah, here the missing ET is sort of has become softer. Right?
Yeah.
So it's not obvious actually.
But that leading order is which, I mean, is with
part. Yeah, is it shallow? Leading order? Is it just pure leading order or
yes,
with multi-leg?
Makes all the difference, right?
Yeah. So I think it's pure leading order. So
that's an unfair comparison with not, respect to what we
it's
use.
Not totally fair.
Ah, no, yeah, that's completely unfair. Yeah.
This
is completely
yes.
different.
Correct. So, you know, maybe this is sort of the upper limit.
It overstates the effect.
Yeah.
But it's also true that we usually say that we're not cutting into the tail of the signal, just of the backgrounds. Right? So if we're in the bulk for the signal, the effect is not nearly as big as if you're...
But in some cases, we are in details, right? When we look at compressed things.
It's not always true,
yeah,
right?
If you're really true.
Very, well, a lot of phase spaces.
Yeah, I mean, and even for stop, I mean, you know, we're around 250, 300, right? So.
That's where you call that a starting.
You're starting.
Less flat.
Yeah.
Sorry, since we are going to get to the background, can I still make a comment on the first, I mean, in the slide before?
Ah, okay.
Sorry, on the PDF, because I mean, so the next leading log calculation so far, I mean, it's true that you use PDF uncertainties, etc., but still a lot of debates while using NNPDF, which is, I mean, we're still using the CT10, I think, values. And with the NNPDF, there is a lot of discussion still ongoing because of the negative results that you get very high Gluino masses, and also the uncertainties explode. So I think that this might be the, I mean, there are still a lot of work ongoing because as soon as we go to 3TB or even before 3TB Gluinos, basically, I mean, with NNPDF, none of the prediction almost holds because you just have, I mean, an error like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, it's certainly true. That's one of the dominant uncertainty. Right? The PDF
and I think that this on the long term is going to affect a lot of our, even our search strategy because, I mean, it's... I mean, if your cross-section is 40% smaller and eventually this affects also the shape, it's something we should be able to... So it's just more of a comment saying that it's not completely trivial, the fact that... I mean, it's true that it's established, but with a large degree of uncertainty, especially in light of the new NNPDF calculation, etc.
Yeah, although, I mean, one of the points that I want to make a little later is I think for the Squark and Gluino searches, you know, although they're developed based on simplified models, we don't tune them very highly. We wouldn't do probably much different if we had a different PDF for the signal.
Yes. It's also what you said is another reason it's so important for us to quote visible cross-section limits and not just draw a line.
Yeah.
As long as we're quoting limits and not drawing a line, then
well, I mean, I think
someone can come along.
I think the status of the art is that at a certain point that line doesn't have any meaning anymore because it's like even a fake prediction. Right now it's not even stable, so it goes negative.
Okay. So about background. So just to be a little bit general at the beginning, so there's sort of three maybe general ways to classify the background estimation methods. So the first one is the simplest one. It's just a pure Monte Carlo estimation, and that's usually used for the very small backgrounds. Then there's a sort of a largely Monte Carlo based estimation, although it's augmented by normalizing the Monte Carlo to the data in some kind of signal depleted control region, and then also then taking that estimate and cross checking it in validation regions that are maybe a little bit closer to the signal. And this is probably the most general method I think that's used in run one. Across SUSY analyses, and then maybe this is a bit of a contrast with CMS, I think, which is follows I think a lot more of this last category, which is the more data-driven approaches. So this is where you actually it's very analysis specific usually, where you exploit some particular feature of the data without using relying less on the Monte Carlo. And so how can you do this? Well, usually you exploit some kind of lack of correlation between two variables, a kind of ABCD type thing. So you exploit this lack of correlation so that you can derive both background templates and the normalization from the data. And so these are just two examples. One is a fake lepton background estimation. And then also you can, for instance, for slow particle searches, you play off the time of flight versus GDX in the tracker, and you can estimate the shapes of these two variables by playing them off of each other. Okay, so then just to say a little bit about the history of the background estimation, which I think is maybe important to go over. You might remember long before Run 1, Atlas SUSY Group was very worried actually about what the data would look like. It would be impossible that Monte Carlos would not match the data at all. And so there was a lot of effort put in before Run 1 into these more data-driven type background estimation methods. And these were summarized in what Atlas called the CSC book. And I think one of the early surprises of Run 1, and a very pleasant one, was just how well the Monte Carlo does in describing the data. And so this is updated quite a bit, but from November 2015, the propaganda plot of all the standard model processes and the amazing agreement between data and Monte Carlo, even for things like W plus 6 jet production. And so hats off to people doing precision QCD calculations. It's actually very fortuitous that we're having a workshop at the same time with them, although I think they all left the room. But I think the success of Run 1 really hinged a lot on these calculations and how good they turned out to be.
Sorry, that's calculations to the best known precision, not what we actually have in the generator.
Yeah.
Yes.
I didn't quite understand.
So, like for example, for TT bar, I imagine this is NNLO, NNLL.
For the total cross section.
While the actual Monte Carlo that we use is not.
Correct. Yeah, correct. But still, getting W plus 6 jet production is, I think, impressive. Okay, so then, partly, the Monte Carlo worked really well. The other issue or feature of data-driven methods is that, it's less portable. It's very specific to a particular analysis. is a possible feature. The other is that, you know, at some level you have to rely on the Monte Carlo anyway to prove to yourself that your data-driven methods that work, for instance, that the lack of correlation that you're relying on is backed up by some logic, some physics from the Monte Carlo. So in some sense, you know, because of these things, in the end, I think because of these issues, the Atlas SUSE searches adopted Monte Carlo-based background estimation techniques as a general rule, although they're very often used in combination with cross-checks against these more data-driven methods. And so maybe that's possibly a bit of a difference in philosophy compared to the CMS approach, and maybe we can discuss that after the CMS talk. This is just I took from one of the papers. This is from the Run 1 multi-jet zero lepton analysis, just to show what the Monte Carlos are that are being used. So it's a mix. It was a Sherpa Alpgen, a bit of Pauheg, and Madgraf. The cross sections are usually known to NNLO or better. Yes, I think that's all I wanted to say. Apart from yes, this is a thing that has become a bit of a hot topic in Atlas recently. Is the unified treatment of between TT bar and single top. So that's missing, and so that's something that we very much look forward to. And from the
But maybe, Josh, here the comment made earlier is important, because as you insist on the NNLO and NNLL for the TT bar, but usually this is always constrained in control regions, right? The absolute normalization.
That's right.
Here is the generator, which does the transfer.
The cross section, the first order cross section in the extreme phase space is taken into account by normalizing to the data. But then we rely on the extrapolated shape from that control region.
Which relies on generators, not on the exotic generation.
That's the right. Okay, so all right. So without going into really any detail on background estimation, you know, the bottom line is almost all observations have come out consistent with the standard model. So, you know, what more is there to say?
One more
So in some sense, you know, there's what more can you say about the methods? I mean, they seem to predict the standard model very well. No major excesses have been seen, so you know, what more is there to say? So maybe there's a couple of points. So one is that it's sometimes said that, you know, that there are too few excesses in the Atlas data than you might expect from fluctuations. And so, you know, are the estimates maybe too conservative? This actually, I think, is a difficult problem. I mean, there are many pull plots. So this is an example actually from a fairly early paper from 7TV. This is the observed minus the expected divided by the uncertainty, right? So, you know, you would expect some kind of Gaussian distribution with a sigma of 1, and this is not projected, but you get some feeling for the up and down, you know, down fluctuations. It gets tricky once you really want to, if you want to interpret this in a really statistical way, because of course there's correlations between these different bins. And this is only within one analysis. Now, if you want to combine all the analyses and try to make some conclusions about the number of fluctuations that we see compared to expectations, I think it's a very difficult problem. So, my own feeling is that it's hard to quantify. It's hard to quantify this statement. Although having said that, there is a tendency to maybe be a little bit conservative in the sense that very often, especially with theoretical uncertainties, when these are estimated, the estimates are very often limited by statistics, low statistics, and a very extreme phase space. And that statistical uncertainty is usually taken as a theoretical uncertainty, even though had we done it with more statistics, it may have turned out to be a minor effect. So it's possible that there are some ingredients of conservatism, but the calculation is not so trivial. Yes.
I mean, so if there were only statistical uncertainties, then we would expect it to be Poisson. But the fact that we include systematics and that it's, often searches can be dominated by systematics, is that a part of what you think plays a role in this?
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah. I mean, if it was all statistical, then it would be very simple.
Then there'd be a problem, right? If it were all statistical, would you still be able to make some of these arguments, or then you would just have to see?
Yeah, well, so then we would have to make the distribution and see, how many three sigma effects have we seen, and is it consistent?
But there's still a statistical overlap between the signal regions, so they're not always independent.
Well, that's true, too.
There's also, I think, in Atlas and CMS, a little bit of a human bias, where if you see a three sigma deviation in a validation region, you look into it very carefully, and if you see a half a sigma deviation, you say, okay, that's fine.
Okay. All right. So let's look at maybe the opposite extreme. Rather than being too conservative, are we maybe a little bit too aggressive? You know, there's always doubts about the reliability of the Monte Carlo in the extreme tails in which we're operating. And we have standard recipes for estimating theoretical uncertainties. Doing scale variations, Parton shower variations, and so on. They're a little bit ad hoc. They're not totally rigorous. and so that's from the theory side. And then from the experimental side, in these extreme, sometimes when the uncertainties depend on the topology of the events. Level of activity. Very often, we don't estimate directly the experimental uncertainties in those conditions, and so there's some extrapolation there as well. And so the question you might ask is, what would you do if could the Atlas background estimation method stand up to a stress test if some big excess was seen? Could we defend our background estimation methods? So that's what I'm going to try to do. We have an excess in Z plus Juts plus missing ET. So let's have a look in a little bit in detail at the background methods there and see if it holds up. So just to remind you of this, this is looking at on-shell Z plus Juts plus missing ET. This was the run one result, and so there was this is the expectation down here, and then so there's an excess, about a 3 sigma excess that's seen in the EE channel. Mu mu channel is a little bit less, 1.7 sigma. It has to be said that this was not confirmed by CMS at ATV, although the cuts were quite different. The other thing that maybe has
also to... Also was nothing with the same cuts, so there was a bunch.
Correct. Yeah, that's here.
No, but also in run one.
Oh, in run one, you went back?
Of course we did.
The other thing that's maybe that should be said here is that, when you look at the distributions of other quantities of this excess, they tend to be, they tend to bunch up towards the background-like side. So, okay, it smells like background. Nevertheless, 3 sigma is one has to take that a little bit seriously. So then in run 2, with the same exact same cuts, now at 13 TeV, and this is the dielepton mass distribution, so you see again this excess here on Z, 2.2 sigma excess, using the same cuts. And so this one also now... Okay, so I didn't know that this was done also in run 1. But anyway, in run 2, in CMS, the same cuts were also used, and so this effect is not confirmed there. But okay, this is about as close to an excess we get in Susie business. So let's examine this case a little bit. So just for reference, I mean, these are this is the signal region definition. So it's high missing ET, a lot of some jet activity, HT above 600 GeV, at least two jets. And that's basically about it. There's some cuts here to get rid of some QCD background. And so this is the table of the, this is the from the run one, the table of backgrounds. And so the largest contribution is from the so-called flavor symmetric backgrounds. Okay, so that means TT bar and also a little bit of WW, WT, and zeta tau tau. So we'll discuss that in a bit. There's also a diboson background, which is maybe the next and most significant. So the diboson background and also the rare top, so this is like TT bar plus vector boson, those come purely from Monte Carlo. This one, the Z plus jets, which is difficult to simulate, the jet mismeasurement comes from a data-driven method, but I'm actually not going to talk about it, since the estimates of these are so small.
But isn't the biggest difference that in CMS that background is not that small?
The Z plus jets?
Right. At 18 or 13 TV?
Doesn't matter.
We don't know your 8 TV ones.
Right? Doesn't matter.
I mean, so the Gabriel's is, of course, our hadronic calorimeter is a bit thicker than yours, which helps suppress that background. The delta phi cuts are also pretty important, which I think you didn't have at 8 TeV, where we know what the answer is.
Yeah, but we should.
To me, the more concerning thing is that your TT bar background is double ours, and or the flavor symmetric background is double ours, which doesn't make any sense. It's, you know, that should really be the same between
the two. The PT cuts are different, though.
Yeah, PT cuts.
Correct that, then the numbers match up.
I had a conversation with
Mike Oliver and Dave.
I know that you guys were curious to see the EMU distribution.
We were,
and it's now public or should be public. It was shown at one of the conferences.
Where was it shown?
At LHC Ski, or at least it was in the backup of LHC Ski because one of you guys asked us, so we put it there. But in any case, if you cannot find it, I can find it. We can show it.
That sounds interesting.
It's going to end up in the, once the paper gets published, it's going to end up in the material.
I thought you were talking about the same signal result.
Yeah.
Did you say that CMS did exactly reproduce the signal? So I guess the PT cut should be the same.
We changed the laptop PT cut.
So they reproduced
the right one. What you do, and then you switch.
We take Atlas, but then Atlas switched, and so that.
So the delta TV result is not.
So even for Atlas, it's not the same.
Yeah,
not quite.
It's a slightly higher leading lepton PT to make the estimation of the fake lepton background much easier.
Yeah. Sure.
Yeah.
All right. So maybe there's, well, okay. Let's just go through this technique, right? So for these flavors symmetric backgrounds. I mean, the key feature here is that you can have an EMU control region with exactly the same cuts as the signal region, except that you have a different flavor combination. So that's a very powerful technique. There's a couple of things you have to do. You have to subtract the fake lepton contribution. So this is the same. This is using the data-driven matrix method. Then there are other contributions from diboson production and also some of these more rare top backgrounds. So these get subtracted, but based on Monte Carlo. And then there's a correction that you have to do for the lepton identification inefficiencies. So that's sort of the main method. And then one can cross-check this method using TT-bar normalized data in a control region. So if we look in the missing ET and dilepton mass plane, this is the signal region here, and one can look in the mass sidebands to normalize the Monte Carlo, and then rely on the Monte Carlo to extrapolate in the MLL line shape. Now, interestingly, this normalization factor is 0.5, which is often not seen in most Atlas analyses, the even though we are in extreme tails, the normalization of the Monte Carlo comes out fairly close to 1, although maybe not so much in the case of tiki bar. So, yeah, I mean, this is a little bit out of the ordinary, but it's thought to be... So
the direction is that you downgraded the Monte Carlo by a factor of 2 in that
yeah. Correct.
And through other analyses are at like 0.6, some are 0.7. You can, it depends on where you are in HT and ET in this phase space.
Is that driven by the NJETS distribution being off?
Just HT and that.
Yeah,
it's essentially like the PT top thing.
It was the PT top, yeah.
It's this top, right.
Yeah, it's PT top, which is, well, it's interesting because, I mean, it's supposed to be a better model in run 2, but the normalization factor is still...
It's not that much better,
yeah,
that's true.
So there's maybe something else going on there.
Do you see the same sort of normalization factor for other TT bar measurements in the same TT or TPT?
So if you look from the top PT or the TT bar system PT, you always see the Monte Carlo being harder than the data.
But by a factor of...
It depends how far you are,
but yeah. It's,
yeah, we see that. We
but
see
you,
that.
You do see the same, huh?
In NJETS, more in NJETS than in...
Yeah, and I think the POHEC plus PTI that you guys use is even worse in certain, for very high number of jets.
In SUSE we both use MANGRAPH, but it depends on...
Yeah, but I mean, because we had this discussion in the context of, for example, the CTH analysis and the results that was recently released.
But I think it's not fully understood, I mean, because we have the I think we have the PT of the TT bar system.
So our precision Monte Carlo is precisely within a factor 2.
Yes. Yeah, that propaganda plot is maybe somewhat propaganda. No, to be fair, this is in somewhat extreme phase space, right? Which is not.
That's what happens, right? It's that our normalization might be awesome, but if the shape is much lower order,
okay, and then just to say there's also some validation done in lower missing ET, and everything seems consistent, you can see in this plot. So this has all the regions, so the control regions and the validation regions, and also the validation regions split off into high HT and all HT. And generally, and the agreement is very good. The scatter looks quite reasonable. And so, maybe one other interesting thing, though, is that so it's the estimates are consistent. But it's interesting that if you use the sideband fit method, you do systematically get higher TT bar background, flavor symmetric background, which is mainly TT bar. The central value of the flavor symmetric background does go up if you use this alternate method.
Sorry, what's the difference between one and the other?
Well, so one is the first method is just using the EMU control region, and then after subtracting some background to the background, and then the main thing is correcting for the lepton ID.
This is just, but then it's just looking in the 81 to 101 region.
Correct. And then the other is the extrapolation from the sidebands in the mass.
So we'll go back to those numbers and just the next page. So which one do you use when you claim the 2.5 sigma?
So this is the one that's used. This was decided beforehand.
Yeah.
And the sideband fit is what exactly? What are you fitting?
So what exactly is fit? Maybe Zach would know. It's
just
the normalization of the top.
Yeah, and you just look in the sidebands away from the ZP, float the top normalization. What should it be in there? The argument is the MLL shape should be pretty well understood.
So effectively, this is just counting yield in the sideband, taking the Monte Carlo to get the central versus the sideband.
You got it. Just
so modular statistics, it should give you the same answer. There's no magic there, right?
That's right. So,
Well, except the Monte Carlo is employed for the
first technique, isn't it?
Yeah, but then, but there's not nothing
for the efficiency.
It's sort of the first one, sort of order one corrections, right? I mean, there are corrections certainly, but they're not very large corrections to the EMU predictions.
Okay, so that was So we can debate whether we, you know, how iron-tight our methods are, but you know, this is maybe an example of something that, that we can examine during the rest of the week, as maybe an illustration of potential weaknesses in the background strategy. So now let's talk a little bit about the search strategy, the signals. So for the R parity conserving case. So we have a bunch of these inclusive searches based on jets and missing ET with a bunch of variations. You can ask for leptons, you can ask for some of the jets to be V-tagged and so on. And so there are many combinations of these. But in general, I mean, these are generic, fairly generic searches just based on a signature of jets and missing ET. HT and missing ET to a large extent, and you can trade off, you know, you can cut hard on missing ET and less hard on HT, or vice versa. You can ask for a lot of jet activity and less missing ET. Basically that's what you're doing without regard too much to the details of how these are produced. So it's not really, although SUSY models are used in the end, there's really nothing much about SUSY that goes into these searches, I would say. Then for the rest of the searches, they become a lot more specialized, relying on particular details of particular SUSY final states. And these are somewhat heavily optimized using simplified models. And the searches are generally focused on prompt signatures. But interestingly, these prompt searches, although they're not designed for a longer lifetime, they do have sensitivity. And one example was this conf note where prompt searches were reinterpreted in a variety of longer lifetime searches. So then let's talk about lifetime. So we heard a little bit about this already in the talks earlier today. This is a combination. Long-lived signatures that are looked at, this is an organizational issue, but both in Atlas SUSY and in exotics groups. So you can have the case where the particle decays in the tracker. So there's a very general and quite powerful analysis looking for a displaced vertex plus something where the displaced vertex is in the tracker. There's an analysis that looks for photons that don't point back to the primary vertex. And then there's the disappearing track analysis that we heard about quite a bit earlier today. Then there's an extension of this where the decay actually takes place in the calorimeter. So this is an analysis that identifies displaced vertices based on information in the muon chambers. And then on the scale where the particle is stable on the detector scale, then we have slow particle search, also multi-charged particle search based on anomalous or high DEDX in the tracker and or in combination with time of flight to the muon system. And then for the really long, and then there's also a stopped Luino search where the Luino stops somewhere in the calorimeter and then decays with a long lifetime. And so this is the summary plot. This is actually updated with 13 TV data, but this gives sort of the coverage, lower limit on the Gluino mass as a function of the lifetime and the various analyses that are contributing.
Is there no green in that plot? Green is stable charged.
Stable charged is here.
Oh, that's just a single point? Oh, I suppose no.
Because it's stable. Okay, so that was that. And then we have the last piece of the search strategy, which is the prompt R parity violating decays. And so, just to remind you here of the notation, so you can have either lepton number violating or baryon number violating, one or the other, in order to avoid too fast proton decay. And so here, the searches are a little bit scattered, maybe less systematic than in the R parity conserving case. So there was the R parity violating stopped BS that we heard about earlier, which is sensitive to this lambda double prime coupling. There's the resonance search in leptons of different flavor, and so this gives some combination of R parity violating couplings. There's a multi-jet search that doesn't rely on missing ET at all, so this is also kind of interesting from our parity conserving SUSY case as well, if we want to look for cases with low missing ET. But this was an analysis of these of the UDD term, a baryon number violating RPV. There are four lepton searches which are sensitive to these parameters, mainly with less sensitivity to these third generation couplings. There's also been a reinterpretation of the prompt R parity conserving searches, reinterpreted in the case of R parity violation in these couplings. And then, you know, as was pointed out, there's a blurring between SUSY and exotics, and so there are many exotic decays that are exotic searches that are sensitive to R parity violation, like the leptocork searches, but they're not actually, there are no results presented in terms of SUSY. Okay, so what do we make of this strategy? So if you try to assess the strategy, so one technique I think that we like in Atlas is to go to a more, you know, most of these searches have been optimized based on simplified models or other simple models like GMSB, minimal GMSB, for instance. So to try to assess how general these are, the technique we like to use in Atlas is to go to the PMSSM. And so there have been a number of these with varying levels of complexity. So there have been some simple ones, a three-parameter model for squirt production, although there have been also some constraints applied to these parameters. So it's not strictly speaking three-parameter. For stop searches, there have been these sort of five-parameter models. Again, though, there have been you know, relations introduced between these parameters in these particular models. So that we call naturalness inspired. There was a well-tempered neutralino type model and a Higgsy enriched model. And then also four parameter models for electroweak. So these four parameters were pointed out earlier this morning. But it's not a full scan in these four parameters. The M1 is fixed at 50 GeV and 10 beta is fixed at 10. So these, it's hard to know what to make of these. I mean, of course, you have results there, but it's very hard to get a feeling, I think, from these on the general applicability of Atlas search techniques. So to really get a feeling for it, we have to go to the whole nine yards, the whole shebang. Shebang, the whole shebang, the whole.
Sorry.
It's entirely.
Yeah,
that's a wonderful word.
So that's the full 19-parameter PMSSM scan. So with experimental constraints applied. So what those constraints are? So there were the low energy flavor constraints that we heard about this morning, and then also the Higgs mass constraint, which has a large impact on the stop mass. And also relic density constraint is applied. So this is just a catalog of the searches that were reinterpreted in the PMSSM, and there are experts in the audience who can tell you more. One thing to note, I think, is that one thing that's missing here is this very general displaced vertex search, which was came out later. So that's not included here, although it's a quite powerful analysis in terms of exploring the lifetime axis. So then let's just go through. So what do we learn from this PMSSM19 model for gluinos? So this is the usual plane that's shown for the simplified model interpretations with the gluino mass and the LSP mass. And so this is showing the fraction of models excluded. So something that's red or black is close to 100% excluded. What's also shown to guide the eye is this line, which is the exclusion limit from the zero lepton search based on simplified models. And so the first takeaway message here is that in this case, as you might expect, since these searches are really not particularly tuned to these simplified models, the coverage of the simplified model is actually quite good compared to a more general interpretation in the PMSSM. There's a region here which is not quite excluded, at least in this paper, near the diagonal, and this gets covered by the monojet search. And there's actually some Atlas results that do this combination internally as well, but apart from this one. So that part is covered. So in general, the conclusion is, below 700 GV or so, this goes all the way to the diagonal, and gluinos are pretty solidly excluded below 700 GV. I guess I said this already, the conclusions match pretty well from the simplified models compared to the PMSSM scans, and the compressed region is the well-known area of difficulty. I guess this is another way to see it that shows this is now in the SCORC gluino plane. Again, below 700 GV, the gluino looks pretty solidly excluded. Okay, so then things get a little bit more interesting when we start to look at SCORCs. So this is the LSP SCORC plane. So this is the limit from the simplified models. And you see that the coverage is less good. In the PMSSM, it's a lot lower. And so this is the line drawn basically using this analysis, but scaling down the SCORC cross section by a factor of 4. And so the mechanisms here that cause this are by breaking the SCORC mass degeneracy, then you can have lower cross section because rather than having 8 SCORCs being produced, you only have, let's say, 2 that are within range of the LHC. Other interesting effects here are that the D-type SCORCs are suppressed by the PDFs, and also that it's interesting to look at the difference between left-handed and right-handed SCORCs. And so left-handed SCORCs, they form an SU2 doublet, and so they tend to be degenerate in mass, whereas the right-handed are not. So you can see the difference here with the left-handed SCORC and the right-handed SCORC with the considerably weaker exclusion in the PMSSM for the right-handed case. So it roughly matches scaling down the cross-section by a factor of 4, whereas in the left-handed type, you scale it down by about a factor of 2. The other interesting thing is that the SCORC right tend to have longer decay chains that involve electroweak partners in between, and so this leads to a dilution of the missing ET, for instance, a bit like the stealth mechanism. For stop and bottom, these are the plots again. This is the exclusion from the third generation searches that are that were tailored to third generation, so not including, for instance, gluino searches. There's a depletion of points at low stop mass due to the Higgs mass constraint, which, as we heard, tends to raise the stop mass. So one might wonder, if we get around this with the NMSSM or something, if we should really maybe try to populate this region a little more, whether this maybe study is a little bit biased by this constraint and the removal of low mass points from this scan. So you see the coverage, which is not too bad. but you know, not certainly not as good as the Guarino searches, especially for the right-handed right-handed stop, where you see that, the black is much lower than the naive exclusion limits from the simplified models.
This region, say here, which searches rule out? Do you know which? I mean, if not your stop searches, which other searches in this big interpretation are effective there?
Yeah.
Well, let's see. So, I mean, this is just from one. So I mean, there are other searches here, right? That you can sort of see.
The plot here is only supposed to be the third generation search. So it's only stop and spot on.
So when you apply whether something is ruled out, you apply all searches that exist for or across anything that gets produced in this PMS endpoint. So, for example, some fraction of these might be ruled out Guarinos or because of the spottums, etc.
Well, no, not this plot actually. This plot is just third generation.
But even that, when it's black, Frank, it means I know no matter what else happened, it got excluded.
Well, except that you can see from the white dot in the middle of the darks area, there aren't a lot of models falling into each bin.
A handful of models in each bin.
So no matter what happens, it's a little too strong. I would say for the ones that we happen to hit, it is the case that.
So the middle plot does show you that in the case of the left-hand one, which has a spottum next to it, then if you look at the spottum plot, which is at the bottom, then you do exclude things that are 400, 200, which is in that kind of gap where you wouldn't expect to exclude the stop, but because the spottum is there, the spottum search is excluded.
Right, and you benefit from the fact that they add up.
And then there's two of them.
Your yields for a given search is from both of them.
Yeah.
And the cross-section from both of them. So that's why the TR is much worse in its color, lighter in its color, say, than the TL, right? Because the TL comes with an SB, and the TR doesn't.
That's right. So these are included.
The left-hand one, the TL case is not completely captured in our simplified models because we only consider the stuff.
I don't think that I thought that the main point is that the TL and the spottum come together. Therefore, every single search that you have is integrated against the sum of both production cross sections.
Right.
Whereas the TR does not have a spottum partner. Therefore, it's always only just the simplified model, quote unquote, that exists.
Except that then we have branching fractions coming and killing.
Okay.
Right.
George? Sorry, a slightly different question. In these scans that you're doing, do you by chance have a sense of, let's say you take a point and you force that no cascade, there's more than two steps, and then you still apply all the searches that you have versus you allowed all the possible decay chain that are allowed in that model point, and you still apply, what's the fraction of the things that gets excluded by restricting only to kind of shorter cascade versus the total?
Yeah, I don't know if that's kind of study.
Because it would give us some sort of idea of how well simplified models are covering.
Well, there are plots in this thing, they don't unfortunately answer your question.
Yeah.
There are plots which answer a related question, which is how many times is a point ruled out by more than one analysis? It's not quite exactly what you're asking, but it gives you some clue. I mean, if all the points were excluded by six analyses, then it's not so good.
But what you really would want to answer this question is to run all your SMHA files through tools like
You can have the files if you want to have the time.
I was just curious to have an idea.
The answer is we didn't.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, we were trying to look at that, but never got up in a good way of measuring.
Because to a certain extent, again, since the very beginning, people like Michelangelo was always curious about closure tests and things like that, and that truncated at two steps. I mean, there is no point in going more than three-dimensional or four-dimensional grids for a simplified model. So that sets of...
No, I mean, I think for the Guino, it's already clear.
Right. The coverage. Yeah.
My question was just if they already did it, nobody has to do it again. But if they didn't do it, then in principle...
Yeah, it has not been done.
We looked at cross correlations.
Right. Right, that's fine.
Okay.
Thank you.
So let's move on. Yeah, let's move on because I think I'm behind. So then this is getting towards the end. So the electroweak searches. So we've already heard quite a bit about the lack of coverage of the electroweak searches. But so that's seen again here, where you know within the simplified model boundaries, actually the exclusion in general is fairly weak. And so some of the reasons are, I mean, again, having to do with the Xeno-like, for instance, Chi2 has a lower cross-section, so the sensitivity is reduced, or the Xeno-like LSP means a small mass gap that we heard about, and that makes searches insensitive as well because the leptons are too low to be seen. There's also an interesting thing here, where there's quite a bit of exclusion at large Chi2 mass for low Chi1 mass for disappearing track analysis. Okay, so what can we conclude from this? I mean, there's still study going on actively in ATLAS to examine carefully these low mass cases that should have sufficient cross section that we should be sensitive to, but somehow are evading our searches. So these are continuing to be examined. However, nevertheless, I mean, to first approximation, these studies, I think, confirm the mechanisms that were already identified in the literature as weak areas in the ATLAS sensitivity. So, I don't know, some people are a little bit critical of that, saying, well, so, you know, we already knew these things. Why waste all this computer time to do these PMSSM scans? And so, well, so yeah, before I get to that, so yeah, what were the mechanisms that were identified already in the literature? So just to recap, the lower squirt cross-section by making the mass degeneracy, the low cross-section for Xenos, the compressed case, longer decay chains, and then the multiple decay channels. So what to say, I mean, personally I find that the fact that we didn't find any new mechanisms is actually very reassuring, that this basically covers it. So the conclusions from the literature turned out to be complete. I don't know if we would have been convinced of this without having done this study. So I find this very reassuring. Also, as we heard, I mean, so one glaring thing is the Higgs-Xeno-like electroweak sector with everything else decoupled, with the strong stuff decoupled. We have not very good sensitivity, and it remains challenging, I think. We don't have a good strategy here. As a function of the coverage, as a function of the lifetime of the NLSP, it seems okay. This may be interesting to study a little bit more systematically. And then the coverage of RPV, it's a little bit less clear to me whether it's how well that's going based on the handful of studies that have been done so far. So this is a bit difficult, I would say, to assess the coverage in a systematic way. And so that's the end. I don't have really conclusions, but I just imagined, I don't know how if this is done in general in academia, but at the national labs, we have to evaluate each other. So I imagined evaluating the ATLAS SUSY searches, SUSY ATLAS, her performance in run one. Whoops. Performance of SUSY ATLAS in run one. So the goal was to discover SUSY, and that was a failure. We didn't discover SUSY in run one, but I think the methods seem pretty solid. You know, we tried to review some of the weaknesses here, but in general, my feeling is that the strategy is fairly sound. And so we have this paradox of the overall rating actually exceeded expectations. I think that's true based on run one. I think it. The output, although it failed to discover SUSY, the output was far beyond, I think, what anyone expected before we started. And so, yeah, this is the final comment from the supervisors. Looking forward to the run two results. Okay, thanks.
Yes. It's all okay because you didn't break any safety rules, and that's all we have.
So we had a few questions. I don't know if there's other questions for George.
I have a question, not so much for George, but sort of given that this is a co-located workshop with precision standard model physics, are we developing a complete disconnect between what we see in beyond the standard model searches, between data versus theory prediction or Monte Carlo, say data versus Monte Carlo, factors of two, right, being not that uncommon, and don't make us break out in sweat.
No.
Doesn't make bother you, doesn't bother me, but doesn't bother any of us in this room probably. Is this a complete disconnect to...
No, it's colors of phase space, is what he said.
Yeah, so, although I think there is a feedback loop.
We are aware of the issues, but the problem is that typically they calculate with great precision an inclusive quantity. And usually we don't measure in any of these searches an inclusive quantity. So if you do an inclusive quantity like the TT bar cross section, yes, we agree in that case. The corner of the phase space of TT bar that he's trying to calculate for this background may not agree, and we don't know whether that's a problem or not because we don't really understand the precision that the other room is calculating in that corner of phase space. That's the problem. They can't give us an error.
Is there communication about that, though? Are they trying to?
Yes.
Yeah, they're working on it. It's hard.
An example of this is TT bar plus single top against WWBB at NLO, right? And I went to a theory friend and said, the uncertainty on this is huge. He said, no, the uncertainty on this is tiny. We looked at the plot, and sure enough, in the inclusive region, in the peak, it's like 2%.
Nobody cares.
And in the tail, it's a factor of 5. And I was talking about the tail, and he was talking about the peak, and fine. But even like during the coffee break, we chatted with some guys, and I've said to many people, WWBB at NLO, this is important, that I know Monica has too. And we talked to one of the guys during the coffee break who said, oh, I had no idea that you guys were so excited about this. This is great. But I'm more motivated to do the prediction. So I guess we just need to keep screaming that.
Yeah, and also, I mean, if I can reiterate, no, they are not two, I mean, I don't know how it works, Shibu, but Shinu, Sepa, I mean, we have discussed and the Atlas Monte Carlo, Atlas CMS workshop was quite, I mean, there were quite a lot of discussions, both from the search world and the standard model measurement world and the Monte Carlo experts, which allowed and gave us a chance to discuss about the weak point and people are pretty much aware about the TT bar, for example, weak points. So there is a very large effort both in Atlas and CMS in order to understand the four Atlas PPI8 and next to next reading order calculation. And unfortunately, this is not yet transferable to the differential distributions. But I mean, there is work in progress on that. I mean, we know that there is a problem in the PT of the top modeling, which is not conversely seen in the PT of the TT bar system, which is causing somehow this. These issues at the high jet multiplicity, and but it's not so trivial to have a correction. A correction a posteriori, and so this is not something that you can do with a simple rewaving, and so there is work ongoing in order to understand that. I mean, whether this is yet sufficient or I mean it's conclusive, not yet, but I don't think that we are developing the two disconnected world. I wouldn't say that.
But it's important that we also measure.
Yes,
these,
absolutely.
These areas. So not only
absolutely.
In searches, but we
yes. I think that there is a TT bar plus jets cross section of 13 TV that is also coming.
There
is
the boosted also the boosted TT bar where you
exactly.
see huge difference.
You see the
in
difference.
Prediction, and which is a real unfolded.
Yes. So.
There's also it really helps when we get good Monte Carlo uncertainties on things because then we know when we should actually panic a little bit. But if their uncertainties say it's 70% out in the tail, then fine, we see a normalization factor and we can take it into account. They know as well as we do that that's a big uncertainty. And if they see a 10% uncertainty in the tail and we see it factor of two, we should worry. We should really worry.
Can you elaborate on this WWBBB issues that is bothering you guys?
So, exactly. So, TTBAR and single top WT, NLO interfere, right? And PowHeg has two schemes to deal with the interference, diagram removal and diagram subtraction. Neither of them is completely accurate, and they give quite large differences in the tails of distributions. Oh. And you can completely ignore that difference and say, well, it doesn't really matter, fine. But if you, I mean, we don't understand how these two diagrams interfere.
So we
don't understand how
what search does that impact for you guys?
A lot.
A lot of them.
Many of them.
All the searches where you have at least two B-jets, basically. Now the TT-bar is pretty much under control, while your real problem is becoming WT. So that's where it comes out. So for any 2B plus MET plus something, or even in the electroweak searches where you have the Higgs in the decay chain. So
you have a WT is a significant
background. Yes, WT is a significant background in several of the searches.
How big is the effect compared to the TW cross-section?
Well, the TW cross-section looks, is what Zach was saying. The TW cross-section looks in a different phase space, because in order to kill the TT bar, so basically they look in the, I think it's in the 1B jet that they look at. So when you don't have 2B jets required, you don't enter in the interference realm, that is really what gives you the problem.
Is it big compared to the high-net WT cross-section?
It can be comparable to the entire WT cross-section.
Yes. Okay. Yes. It's big.
It's very, very big.
If you're beyond the top mass peak, then it's basically half of the
top mass peak.
If not more,
it's just a quarter of the cross-section.
I'm wondering why is it that we don't, that never bothered us?
Well, I think because you don't consider any BRDS systematic uncertainties, so you basically take, you don't consider any kind of uncertainty on the diagram scheme that is used for the treatment of the WT in association with the TTBAR.
We usually, I think this goes back to George was saying, that usually do not pay much attention to what the Monte Carlo says.
Yeah, you guys lump it all together, right?
Yeah. WT and together, and then find some trick, and then...
But how do you, I mean, okay.
Well, I mean, it depends, analysis by analysis, we should probably have some examples where you tell us where it is that bothers you, and we say why it doesn't bother us, and maybe you make a mistake, who knows.
I think it's underestimated, but we can comment in...
But that's interesting to get back to this.
Yes, absolutely.
The danger is a bit that there's a signal hiding in the control region.
Exactly. Well, I mean, this is one of the issues. So to make sure that you have, I mean, I think that that one thing of having cross checks with the Monte Carlo prediction, it helps you also to understand whether you are hiding any signal. I mean, so in a certain extent, it's an iterative procedure. So if you have
the Monte Carlo is missing something.
But I think we should go over, maybe one of you guys can present one specific example, one specific analysis where this bothers you, and then we can do the same thing for ours to see what we do in that analysis.
Right.
Okay.
If you're going to do it for this particular example of TT bar and single top, you should get Brian Weber from
Yes,
the other room.
Yes, I know, but he was already my TV.
Let him sit here while you have the discussion.
Yes, I think it was. I don't know how much I can show.
Yeah, but I would like to see one search.
Yeah, I mean, we can provide you an example, I can show you with the numbers. Yeah. I'll give an example with run one. We can give the one lepton BB by the electroweak. That's probably the best.
Yeah, that's the best example.
That's the best example. Yeah. And on that, we should have pretty much everything.
And then we
walk ourselves through the logic, at least. Why this would or would not be an issue for us.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm, yes.
Yeah.
Comparable.
So which analysis, why don't you pick one analysis and then the CMS people in this room
I think go. We can say, I mean, is the the run one electroweak, we can take the electroweak Giugino neutralino production in two Higgs in the final state, one lepton plus PBBOB.
Okay.
You have the same analysis, so I think that in this we can compare.
Do we have an author here of this analysis?
No.
Semi-author?
You were saying.
Yeah, okay.
Do you remember the details?
More or less.
You will not have any communication on the spot.
Stop analysis. I mean, I think there are a lot of experts on the stop.
Okay, but let's pick one. So this is WH
yeah.
plus MET. Okay, fine. Since you've got nothing better to do.
All right, well, let's thank George again.